Hey everyone, this is John.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Super Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And you probably noticed Wes is not here.
It's true, yeah. He's conspicuously absent, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, sure is. And there is a reason for it. We were talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
Why don't we break the news?
Well, I mean, as I'm sure our listeners are now well aware, Prince has passed away, the great musician Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes in the past has spoken ill of him on many occasions, and
yes.
His death and Wes's absence seem, I don't know.
I think it's premature to call him a suspect. He's a person of interest
right
now.
That's true. The police are looking for him.
Yes.
So if you are aware of his whereabouts, please, he's UER on he's streaming sometimes. I don't know, there might be some evidence of what he's done.
Right.
We really need to bring him to justice.
He just died. This is probably in real poor taste.
Yeah, that's true.
I like it.
But hey, you know. I'm actually a really big fan of Prince.
Uh-huh.
So, just as an aside, people should go get the album Controversy. It's really good. You should go listen to Sheila E.'s Glamorous Life. He produced and arranged that album. So good. Yeah, Prince is fantastic.
So, like we said at the top of the show, it's the Super Nintendo Show.
Oh, and Wes murdered him.
Yes.
Wes didn't murder him.
Yes. He did. And it was in no way in association with his affiliation with ISIS. This is a totally unrelated.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah. So, we talk about Super Nintendo games as they came out sort of semi-chronologically 21 years ago. In April of 1995 is the month we would be talking about. Mm-hmm. Nothing really of note came out, so we're going to fast forward a little bit to May 1995, which mm-hmm. Ogre Battle was the big game.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think we've talked about it a little bit before. I am a giant fan of this game. I think it's really incredible. The scope of this game is huge. It accomplishes quite a bit. Have you played much of it?
I have not. I did do a little bit of research, so we can kind of vamp into this real quick. It was developed by Quest, who we've talked about before on the Super Nintendo Show, published by Enix in North America. Quest self-published in Japan. And Quest is mainly known for the Tactics Ogre series of games. Ogre Battle, Tactics Ogre on the Super Nintendo, Ogre Battle 64.
Mm-hmm.
And this developer was actually purchased by Square back in 2002. So, in the sort of the PS2 GameCube era.
Well, it makes sense that the fates of these companies would align because of how ingrained this is. I think with any Squaresoft fan would probably find so much that they love of the RPGs that they made in this.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, the designer of Ogre Battle, Yasumi Matsuno, he actually went to work for Square shortly after Ogre Battle came out. So, a little bit of history about this guy. This guy's actually had a pretty interesting career. He was a designer on Ogre Battle, also worked on Tactics Ogre
mm-hmm.
and Final Fantasy Tactics, Vagrant Story, Final Fantasy XII. Right during the development of Final Fantasy XII, he left Square Enix. And this guy, he's hopped around quite a bit.
Oh, he's looking after Final Fantasy VII.
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Yeah. So he was at Square from 1995 until 2005
mm-hmm.
and stepped down. There was like some drama surrounding the development of Final Fantasy XII, and he stepped aside after mm-hmm. that. But aside from working on these really high pedigree RPGs, he also worked with Platinum Games on the game Mad World for the Wii. He did the story for that game. He also...
Oh, I remember that. The black and white...
Mm-hmm. Hyper-violent.
Yeah, that was kind of a cool game.
Yep. He actually reassembled years later with the Tactics Ogre team for a sort of reimagined PSP port.
Hmm.
He also did Crimson Shroud.
Did you play that? That's a
Tactics
game.
Ogre?
Or
Mad World.
No, Crimson Shroud. Crimson, God, that's a tongue twister.
3DS.
Yeah.
Relentless Russell Westbrook.
Relentless Russell Westbrook.
So, Crimson Shroud, yeah, I played
Cecilia
that.
And the Silhouette Saloon.
Oh, that's good.
That is a good one.
So, yeah, Crimson Shroud, I did play that one. I actually probably talked about that on a show. It was it's a small 3DS, kind of an indie title, but not really. Level 5 did this sort of series of unrelated games. They called them the Guild series. And it was a bunch of pretty well-known designers making very small projects in small amounts of time and putting them out there on the 3DS eShop, and a lot of them turned out to be really cool. Crimson Shroud is probably the best of the group. It's very much like I guess, how I would imagine how like a Dungeons & Dragons or a tabletop RPG is played, because you have, like, your characters are just literal figures that are static. They don't do any movement, but there's like dialogue between them, and you try to, like a traditional RPG, you try to execute moves, but then in order to try to execute these moves, you do a dice roll, and you can increase your chances of successfully pulling off a move by doing extra dice rolls, which gets into this sort of economy of the game of managing your resources. It's been a while since I played it, but it's a really fun little RPG, and it's short. It's brief, which is kind of nice because it gives you this really nice condensed experience.
That's pretty cool.
Getting back to Matsuno really quick, he did some scenario writing for Terra Battle, which is the getting back to like the Square Enix connection.
That's the, I think, is what, second most recent project?
Yes. But Terra Battle was a mobile game by the company Mistwalker, which is now the Final Fantasy creators, Sakaguchi Company. So there again, kind of...
this guy has built, aside from this one crazy outlier in Mad World, he's basically just the king of these tile-based...
Yeah. Strategy
RPGs. Strategy RPGs.
Yeah, that's kind of the bread and butter. Mad World really is just a super interesting outlier there, because...
I mean, the next project that's to be announced, the release date, I guess, is called Unsung Story, Tale of the Guardians.
Yeah, and that one seemed to be...
I'm guessing that's probably an RPG.
It sounds a lot like an RPG, doesn't it?
It's not called Counter-Strike.
So this guy... It's fun to see, and I've mentioned before, like the sort of incestuous nature of all of these developers and who hops from one company to the other. And traditionally, you think of, like especially with Japanese developers, they stick with one company for a long time. And it's interesting to see like this guy just hops around from company to company. Like, yeah, I'll go work with these guys now. I'll go over here and work there. And he doesn't seem to be doing any like major designing anymore. He does a lot of scenario writing. Mm-hmm. But it's still an interesting career, an interesting...
Either it's money or maybe it's whoever's going to exact his vision, give him the most control.
Sure.
I'm sure it's probably some combination of those things.
Yeah. So should we get into the game proper here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool.
You want to kickstart this? Or
no, go ahead, jump right in. Let's go off into the deep end.
So actually, it's kind of great that we recently started playing those Fire Emblem games.
Yeah.
Because it reminds me a lot of Fire Emblem. And that there is the pairing mechanic that you have.
Oh, no shit.
Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
It's sort of like helps you build teams around. Again, you're sort of tile based, but you can pair up ones that will synergize well.
Yeah.
And this whole game is really centered around that idea where you've got like a big town, you've got these little spots you want to take, and then you build teams. But instead of, say, even at the most units I've ever thrown into a battle on this Fire Emblem game, Ogre Battle, it's going to let you throw 3-4 times as many.
So we're talking like massive scale battles here.
Oh, yeah. Like you could, it's sort of broken down into quadrants of teams, and you have a front row and a back row.
So this is getting real basic here real quick, just to make sure I understand how. So you actually build like a squad of what, like 4 or 5 units, something like that. And when you're moving around in your tile set, that squad is actually moving around as one unit?
What's going to happen is, say, like, you're basically going to open up on a map. It'll be, say, you know, you progress through the maps of the game. And the maps will be, like, just a big, giant area, and there's going to be little towns and outposts, and there's going to be things you have to capture, and you have to prevent your opponent from capturing your base. So it's sort of like a defend thing. And again, it's also sort of like...
Advance Wars.
Yeah, you have to worry that your opponent is going to sneak in and take your base, or that you're not going to be prepared for how they're going to maneuver. So you have to build these groups of fighters together based around the things that they do well, throw them into fights with each other. If they destroy them out, like, and again, I don't want to go overboard with just describing how this game plays out, but you have a front row and a back row. You can have as many as, I think, 5 or 6 total units. And they have big and small, and you'll have a front row and a back row. So say, like, for example, you have a beast tamer and 2 dragons. You want... 2 dragons are big creatures. You want your front row to be those 2 dragons, and you want your beast master in the back, who's going to basically be cracking the whip on them, making them stronger.
So, essentially, like, is your front row, that's who's absorbing most of your damage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and depending upon what row you're in, you're going to perform a different act. So, like, if you had your dragon in the back rows, I think they'll do, like, a big fire breath. which is not that powerful, but if they're in the front row, they're going to charge in and attack and do massive, massive damage.
Okay, so on a macro scale, when you're entering these battles, like if you have your unit of troops and an enemy unit of troops, once you enter a battle, are you in any sort of control, or is it just based on like where they're positioned, they're going to execute different
If I'm remembering maneuvers. Correctly, you can step into the fights. There's certain things that you can do with these tarot cards. And it is a legit occult tarot deck where you have all of the, you have the fool and the priestess and death and the empress, like all of these cards, and they'll perform different acts. So you can sort of in that way manipulate it, but for the most part, the fight is on rails. One team's going to go, next team's going to go, and then I believe there's another round of attacks.
So it's not like a Pokemon battle where you're like selecting moves and like executing like that.
No, the turns will just take place as they happen. The only thing that you really have to be prepared for is before the fight starts, whether or not you want to play a card. And then the fight takes place, you know, and what will happen is if you manage to defeat the entire squad, they just poof, disappear, they're gone. Let's say you go into a fight with five of them, you take out two of their front row and one guy in the back. They're still going to be, they're going to bounce away from you, but they'll still be active. And then you kind of have to finish the fight, kind of have to keep chasing after them. So there's a lot of strategy involved with setting up the fights, coordinating, and making sure that you're not going to, like, totally expose some part of the map.
I'm interested in...
I mean, like, here, I brought this picture up because I thought this would perfectly describe what's going on here. So, like, you have rows. Like, this is, for example, three grunts, basically. Three soldiers. That's a black mage, and that's your hero. So your hero is really safe. Your black mage is hidden from behind, and you got just meat at the front line.
Is your hero, is that like a class of character, or is that like your avatar?
That's your main guy.
Okay.
And there are other ones that you can recruit throughout the game. There is, by the way, every team, if you're going to build a team, you have to select a hero. Or like one like sort of upper echelon guy. So you'll see they all have these crosses next to them. And that means that they're the one that this team is centered around.
Okay.
If, God forbid, you lose that guy, if he faints in battle, then your team is going to turn into a skull and start automatically retreating back to base so you can heal up. So you can't overextend. If you find yourself overextending and your troops are getting wiped out, you basically are making the game last for fucking ever. Because it means no matter where they are on the map, they gotta go all the way home, heal up, get all the way back to a base where they can heal and then get back out to the fight.
Can they be intercepted by an enemy unit and just wiped out?
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely. Do you have any sort of agency over their fight if you lose the hero? Like, if they get into a fight, can you play a tarot card?
You will. This is a scenario I don't really recall encountering all that much, simply because if your hero is probably going to be the strongest guy. If that one falls, the rest of your team is probably already melted away.
Gotcha. So, no, I had a question. I lost it. Continue.
Oh, I mean, the character classes are cool. I mean, you've got, of course, your typical mages. You've got black mages, white mages. You've got different kinds of spellcasters. You've got beasts. You actually, and this is another way, a weird way, and this is kind of like Pokemon. You can collect things. You can collect these golems. And it's great to have a FAQ handy because it's going to tell you where everything can be found. But say, for example, you're just stumbling around in the mountains. You might encounter golems. You can catch golems there. You go and get a neutral town. Say your troops find their way to a neutral town. The shop might sell things, and they also might have guys you can recruit. So if you want more of these frontline grunts that you don't care about just throwing away, then good. If you want to take these grunts from soldiers and turn them into paladins, then they can lead a team, you know?
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me. The question that I had, is there any sort of, like, permanent death? Like, if you lose a hero, is he just back by the time you heal up?
If I'm remembering correctly, if you lose an entire team, they're all gone.
Okay.
But as long as one of them can get back to the base and heal up, they should be fine.
Okay, so they're, like, carrying the injured bodies of the rest of your team,
so
to speak.
So, yeah, you got to be really, really careful.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then if somebody makes it back, you just get everybody back, like, the next battle?
Yeah. Oh, no, I think it's immediately back. Oh,
okay.
Everyone just... So, it, I mean...
You got a doctor there waiting for
you. You can kind of keep... you know, staggering lines to where you have guys retreating while others are attacking, if you want. It just depends on kind of how you want to play. I find that it's, if you're really maximizing the teams well, you're probably going to steamroll most fights. There is, again, definitely a lot of strategy involved. If you put all your archers on the front line and your troops in the back, then you're not going to be doing anything good, but...
And I'm always interested in these sort of strategy games is how they sort of guide you into building a team? Like, in the early goings of the game, do you feel like they nudge you in a particular direction? Like, hey, you want to build these sorts of units, and these are the sort of troops that you want to use? Like, for example, in a Fire Emblem game, especially earlier Fire Emblem games, they hit you with a lot of axe units right up front. So it's kind of guiding you, like, hey, you want to have someone with some swords. And then they'll start mixing in troops slowly in other ways. So, like, they'll mix in a Pegasus Knight. Yeah. And the Pegasus Knight mixing, there's invariably some archers hanging out. Like, hey, don't fucking go near those guys because they're going to kill you. That kind of thing. Do you feel like there's any sort of...
Well, I think to that point, yeah, absolutely. I think there is a lot of strategy behind building teams and making them robust and able to hold up in a fight, because quite frankly, if you were to go into a fight with a freaking Cerberus creature and a black mage behind it with a golem at the front, and all you've got is like five little units here, if this guy weren't your freaking main character, this team is gonna get mopped up really quick, because these guys are basically one hit KO machines. They're gonna knock them out hard. So you really have to prepare. You have to have a good team. If I saw like a team like this I was about to face, I'd want to throw one of my own up there. I'd want to have at least one, technically what they call large creatures, in there to get into the fray. It's not so simple to say that it's axes or swords. It's a lot of just, I don't know, having good balance on the team. And I'm also a big fan of the idea, that's what these guys with crosses, of course, are, is keeping heals. Keeping heals handy on teams. And there's different ways you can heal, but it's always good to have a team replenishing its life during a fight.
Yeah, it'd be better to keep them out to the field than have them carry the corpses of their friends back and like, okay, now let's get back out there.
But more than a type alignment, or more than like fire, grass, water,
like
or
a rock, paper, scissors,
the game has a straight up, are you good and are you evil? And the game, and this is one of the drawbacks of the game, it doesn't really explicitly state how one intends to be good and how one intends to be evil. There's obvious things like, do you want to have your soldier become a knight? Or do you want to have a character, like, I think it's the soldier too, can become a vampire. And a vampire is, of course, pure evil. And the knight is good. So it's sort of like, you know, where do you want to be holy? Do you want to be unholy? But then there's also things like, you're not really supposed to have your strongest units destroy weak units. It's supposed to be sort of, I guess, what you would say, a fair fight.
Okay.
Is another thing. And you have a bar. You have this constant bar that's on your side. And it goes up and down. And depending upon how it goes up and down, you recruit unique characters in the game that will be... Like, you liberate a town, and then there will be this pop-up dialogue that's like, oh, thank you so much for saving us. I'm the town bard. I'm going to join your forces. That kind of thing. Or if you have been evil this entire time, if you've been rolling around with vampires all game, and you're, you know, good bars, if you're pretty much evil, you go into a town, even though you technically liberated them from the bad guys, they're going to be like, you guys are horrible monsters. Are you here to, like, rape everybody and murder everybody? Is that your game? Like, they will hate you, and some of them will want to join you, and they will be the worst people in the game. The worst, like, morally. They will be, like, thieves, murderers, just awful people. So, okay. And then again, it's something that, from my experience in playing, if you're not careful, you will very, very quickly go evil. From what I've seen of, like, walkthroughs and, like, breakdowns of the game, it's best to be good because they have the cooler shit. If you are evil, the game's a lot easier. So it's sort of a trade-off. Do you want all the bells and whistles, all the glitter and fancy shit, or do you just want to just house? Do you just want to crush?
Gotcha. I want to get back to, said about, like, recruiting monsters.
Yep.
Is there sort of this, like a compendium? Is there a Pokedex for the type of...
Not really.
You have to use all FAQ for that kind of stuff.
You just gotta, and you'll see them all the time. I mean, it would be like, if you were just in a fight in a desert or a mountain, there's terrain. Like Fire Emblem, it's terrain, and you just kind of expect certain creatures to come from certain areas.
I mean, is it pretty simple? Like total amount of creatures in the game are like approaching like 150 or anything like that?
No. I mean, I think it's 10?
Okay.
Maybe 15? But they're cool. They're really cool. Like I said, there's a Cerberus. There's a multi-headed dog. I don't see them on... I'm just looking at this like list here. You have these golem-like characters. You have these big dragons that are in the game. I feel like there's some other ones. There's some really... Whoever is this team that's been built here is definitely good aligned. It looks like it's very much a good alignment, because there's all kinds of stuff on the dark side that you don't see. There's like mermaids in it that have really, really powerful mass cast it can do, where it like brings down hail on your opponents, and it's really, really strong. I mean, yeah, there's Amazons, there's these, I think they're called doll mages. They actually have these little dolls that, like, I think it was the character with the huge rack in Final Fantasy X Lulu. That would send out the little doll, and the doll would do a spell sometimes, right? Yeah. That was how she operated.
Well, that was kind of her melee attack, that the doll would go out there and hit you and then saunter on back.
So, same deal there. I think it's a game that has so much freaking complexity, it's unreal.
So, how do you go about recruiting the monsters? Do you like have a special class of character that does it for you? It's just like you encounter them and they're yours now?
I think you just beat them, and then I think an option... regrettably, I wish I had some more time to play this to catch up for this recording of it. If I remember correctly, all you have to do is just beat them, and then an option comes up if you want to collect them or capture them. You may need... I don't think it's so esoteric like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, where you have to have a specifically classed hunter that's going to shoot it with a capture bow that's got a 5% chance. It's not like that. These things are pretty easy to find and pretty easy to pull into your team.
Okay. Is it like an essential mechanic of the game that you recruit? Can you like go throughout the game without recruiting anything?
You could probably do that, yeah. You could probably go through the whole game. Well, what you would want to do is stock. You would want to have a giant roster. I mean, because if you add it all up, that's 45. You could go into a game of 45 individual characters that you've made.
Hmm.
So what you would definitely want to do is go to the nearest town and recruit whatever people they have there. So you can at least get some, you know, some characters, get some things going. But I think it's all having one of those Beastmasters with a couple of anything, of any of these other beast character types is good. Because it's just going to, and they're fun to play with. You want to roll around with it. It's cool when you're like, it's basically your hero and a dragon.
Yeah.
That are just like, hey, we're just hanging out. Right. Trolling around here,
dragon.
Looking for fights. What you guys up to?
So, it's interesting that it's a mechanic that comes up in this game. It's actually something that also comes up in a game that we were going to talk about, and I'll probably just talk about it a little bit here for just a minute to do a comparison. But the game Shin Megami Tensei for the Super Nintendo, it never came out in North America. It came out in Japan, I think, in like 92 or 93. I'll probably talk a little bit more in detail next month, but that's a core mechanic of the game, is going out and recruiting these creatures, very grotesque creatures at times. They are.
Yes, I did not know much about this game until you were like, oh, this came out, we should probably talk about it. And I kind of wish I had played a little bit, because it looks insane.
Yeah.
Looks so messed up.
It's bizarre and it's dark. And yeah, what you do is you're going around in this post-apocalyptic world, and it's an RPG, but all of your party members are these demons that you run into, these characters.
Well, it looks like it's all first person, is that right? Like you're kind of wandering around through stuff.
Yeah, and so basically you have like your overworld map, where you're just like a little icon moving around the map, and you enter different areas of interest, and what you do, it becomes like a first person dungeon crawler. So you're walking through these first person corridors, you encounter a monster, and when you encounter a monster, you of course have these RPG battles with different elemental alignments and such, but the main mechanic of the game, the main way of expanding your party, is you initiate a conversation with these demons. And I haven't played enough of the Super Nintendo one to really make an informed analysis of the battle system, but how the series has traditionally worked is that you enter a dialogue tree, and they'll sometimes ask you these existential questions about life or something very frivolous, and depending on your answers, you'll sort of be able to build an affinity with them. And sometimes they'll ask you things. Okay, they'll ask you things like, "Hey, I'll join your party if you give me some cash," or "I'll join your party if you give me an item."
Yeah.
Or sometimes they'll just say, "Give me an item," and if you give them an item, sometimes they'll be like, "All right, thanks, bye," and leave. And sometimes, and see, sometimes like if you
is it like one chance? You get one chance to get this?
No. What'll happen is, look, there's a ton of different, let's just say, an ogre, like some sort of ogre creature in the game. There's a ton of them, and you'll run into them all the time.
So you want a naked tit hanging out cat lady?
Yeah, naked tit hanging out cat lady. So what you'll do is you'll run into a bunch of them. You might even run into a bunch of them in one fight.
Yeah.
And if you have one and you want to recruit another one, there's no guarantee that the same dialogue tree will lead you to the same result. So there's a lot of luck involved and a lot of trial and error.
Or awesome, what alien that is the same color as the horse she's riding?
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
They're aliens from the same planet. It's fine.
Yeah.
So And see, in a game like that, and you're... I don't remember if it's this way in the Super Nintendo version, but in later versions of the game, your demons that you recruit will level up with you, but they won't level up as quickly as you. So a lot of times they're getting outclassed as you're entering different areas, so you have to recruit new ones. You can also fuse them together to make more powerful ones, but there's never that sort of really Pokedex-esque level of detail to the list of monsters. I mean, there's never, like, within the game, the sort of quick guide of, if I fuse these two together, I'll get this thing. This is how I get this monster. This is where this one is, so on and so forth. So the exposure that I've had to the series, I think definitely the most I've played of the series is in Shin Megami Tensei 4 for the 3DS. I go through the game and I don't know if the monsters I ended with are good or not. Like, is this the best thing I could have gotten? And a lot of times, like, they try to not have you build this affinity with particular monsters, but there are one or two where, like, I don't want to fuse you with anything. Like, I had, like, this big, like, old-looking dragon dude, like a Chinese dragon with a long, like, mustache and stuff. I was like, I don't want to fuse you with anything. I like you. Uh-huh. So, anyway, but one other thing that I wanted to mention about the sort of recruitment system is there are times where you'll encounter a demon and you'll go through this dialogue tree and like, okay, I'll go along with you if you murder one of your other demons. Yeah. So you have to, like, kill one of your party members.
That's a really, really shitty thing for them to do.
Yeah. Yeah, the game can be mean, and it's the game series is pretty notorious for its difficulty. So yeah, it's a twisted, bizarre, really dark RPG franchise. I'm excited to actually get into a bit more detail the next time we do a Super Nintendo show.
Well, it looks like there's a great amount of detail is given to these characters. Not just in the artwork, but like from the gameplay, it looks like they all seem really cool. Yeah, I mean, it looks really interesting to me too.
Yep.
I want to check it out.
So let's jump back over to Ogre Battle. Is there anything... Yep. What didn't we cover?
Where did we leave off? We can leave off at the point that, like, the game is very linear as you play it. That was the next point I was going to make, is that, like, it's map after map after map. It's not like there's time to step away from it.
There's no My Castle with an accessory shop.
Exactly. You're not trying to woo the...
Your blood
mermaid on your team or anything like that. No, that does not happen. It's just, like... There's like 30-something, maybe 40 different maps you play through all in order, and they get great, much bigger in scale as you go. So the first 5 maps, probably beat each one in 5 to 10 minutes. Towards the end of it, when you are pumping out so many... Oh, and one of the things I didn't bring up is there's sort of a dollar cost associated with your team. So if you want to put them out on the field and play them, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So, depending upon what you have, it can cost you a lot. And if you're going to basically try to throw everything you have to do a simple fight where it's like all of your entire squad versus like a 3 little things at crappy units, the resources you're spending are going to be so vast compared to the money that you take in from doing this. So, you really need to engage in some economy throughout the game and think to yourself, and you can really only get the, you can spawn them as you go. You can bring more onto the field, but they're going to keep costing you more. So,
that's good though. So if you figure kinda, out, like, yeah. So if you find out, like, hey, I wanted to save some cash, but I realize I'm overmatched here. So
let's you can still else. Pump out another set of units, and they're going to cost you big, but they're going to be there to help you out.
So, is there any other use for that cash? Is it pretty much like, do you have like a certain amount of cash that you have to use throughout the entire game?
There are held items in the game. Best to call them held items. I think you only have one slot to actually hold something. But they can have some really powerful effects on the characters.
So you're not doing things like equipping weapons and stuff.
You're not going to get like a full inventory system where you're throwing on a sword and a shield and armor and a helm. I think it's really just like one item, and that one item can be pretty powerful, but yeah, the game doesn't, and again, you've got potentially 40, 50 units that you're building, so to try to have 300 items that you have to now maintain.
I mean, yeah, even if it was
characters, like, is absurd.
Yeah, even if it was just like a weapon and one piece of armor, you multiply that by 40 or 50 guys, and yeah, you're spending a lot of time equipping. Yeah. So, but is there like any sort of interstitial like management? I guess you don't really need management if you're not equipping a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you got gear, and I mean, when you're in towns, so you can buy and sell stuff. I think they actually have shops. I wish I had the game in front of me, because like if you just go to a basic neutral town, there's a lot of things you can do there. Again, like just like recruiting them, and they're all going to do different things, and they sell different stuff. I think there's things like teleports that you can do, which are really, really beneficial. Say you're in that fight, and you're like just about to knock down the enemy base. And by the way, the enemy gets the same luxury you do. You don't take out that team, they're going to retreat to their base and fully heal. So you might actually find yourself in that stalemate where you just can't break the barrier. You can't beat the boss. And in that scenario, what you would probably want to do is then import some more units, that your strongest ones you have, just pay the money, and then teleport them to the nearest owned base, the nearest owned town or safe spot, and then rush in and get the win. Because actually, yeah, and some of the boss characters are really strong in this game. It's not strong as in they're going to beat you. Strong as in you just simply can't beat them. They're just too tanky, too defensive.
Yeah.
So you kind of got to plan ahead and make sure that you guys are strong enough. And again, that because the game forces you into that economy where you have to think to yourself, I want to win, you know, simply but barely. I don't want to overdo it. I don't want to throw all my money into this and waste it all on a fight where I don't need any of this.
So you mentioned earlier like something about a class change. Is it like a level up system for your individual units? Or they?
Yeah. So each individual character has its own good, bad affinity. Like a neutral chart that you can build them up or down from. So again, you've got that knight. If your knight is routinely going into battle and killing weaklings and slaughtering the innocent, you know, just doing bad things, he is the type to go vampire. Whereas if he is constantly going in there, he's defending and he's being healed and he's, you know, keeping you safe. And I forget all, again, there's a lot of deeper mechanics that explain what's going to make a character good or bad. He will then go good. And then that character will become a knight paladin, or he'll become a paladin, basically. So every character has this alignment. So you can make them good, you can make them bad, you can kind of pick for how you want to play it.
So once he becomes that sort of knight paladin, can his good bad affinity then reverse direction at that point?
Yes.
So he can. So even though he's like a paladin, he can still go vampire if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Okay. Totally.
Mm-hmm. You can change. You can course correct your entire team. It's very difficult to do, and like I said, you might play through a whole battle and then it moves 2 pixels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've done something horrible, it'll just move a little bit. But it's progressively playing all of these battles. It's difficult to change your mind on what direction you want to go. At least that I've seen. Maybe there's people that have played this game a little more than I have and know of easy ways to manipulate this game mechanic. But for me, it's always been, I try really, really hard for a while, and then I just get tired of trying to be good. And then I'm just like, fuck it. Win the fights. Like, I don't care anymore. Just mow everybody down.
We were nice to the first few towns.
Let's pick the guys I want to play with, and then
I got a war to win here.
Move on. Yeah.
So,
there's narrative stuff. There's actual, if you care about the story, there's actual narrative stuff that is, things are going to change. The towns are going to, again, they may very well hate you for liberating them.
So, yeah, how fucked up is that? Like, fine, fight your own wars from now on.
But it's under the idea that the game isn't explicitly stating it, but you're going in there burning and pillaging and being an awful person, an awful human being.
So let's say that you got a group of stronger units and an enemy will come attack with a bunch of weaklings. Is that going to, like, even though they're the aggressor there,
I understand it still harms you.
Interesting.
It still makes you the bad guy. What you should have done is not, like,
put them in a position where they're going to draw that aggression.
Yeah, not stomped everybody like that.
Okay.
You should have tried to use this as an opportunity to build weaker characters, bring in new characters, and build them. Then to be like, oh, I'm just going to steamroll with the best guys I got.
Okay.
It would be a good opportunity for you to then, like, say, oh, this is the perfect time for me to now actually build a new archer, build a new caster, maybe catch one of those beasts that I caught that I barely touch, maybe use this in a team, and make the fight a little more competitive and more rewarding for the one that wins it.
That's pretty smart design, because then it does actually reward you for actively engaging with your lesser used units. So how the hell they do it, and it pays off, I assume, to use as many units as possible, because then when you get into the late game, you have more useful things at your disposal. Oh, so as opposed to something like a Fire Emblem, where you can get through a lot of the early game just relying on like maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 different units, a very small team. Mm-hmm. Fire Emblem does the same sort of encouragement, where it encourages you to use weaker units, but once you there's a point of no return. Like, once you get a certain distance in Fire Emblem, if you're not like doing things like side missions or DLC, things like that, your weaker units are going to be trash. You're not going to be able to get them caught up with everyone, especially early in the series.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of times, especially early on in the Fire Emblem series, at least in North America, you can't use everyone. If you try to use everyone, you're going to have a lot of balance, but the enemy is going to outclass you quickly and you won't be able to catch up. So it makes
if you think about it, it's kind of like an investment of time in the game. I think about this, and this happens all the time in Pokemon with me too, where it's like, oh, you know, this thing sucks right now, but it's going to be really fucking awesome when it hits level 45 and it fully evolves. And then I realize I've beaten the game, and it's, I did that where I basically played with him and on my entire team, and he's level 47. I barely did anything with it. Mm. It's like, I got it really cool for 5% of the game.
Yeah.
And there's so many characters that I'm feeling that way about when I'm playing this new Fire Emblem game. Granted, it's pretty much, it's not the most challenging game, but there's a lot of characters that I wish that I wasn't just putting them in the fight so that I could feel like I'm grinding them up and making them good. I'd like them to be able to kind of contribute to a fight in some way.
Yeah, see, that's the thing about Fire Emblem is, most of the time, every Fire Emblem I've played, except maybe Conquest and maybe Awakening, because Awakening, like the 3DS Fire Emblems, give you a lot of opportunity to catch player like other units up with side missions. Conquest isn't so much like that unless you're doing like DLC. But anyway, what you have to do, and what I've done in multiple Fire Emblem games prior to the 3DS ones, is I'll play the first third, maybe the first half. I'll figure out who I want to use. And then I'll restart. I'm like, okay, these are the 12 or 13 guys I want to use throughout the game. So these are who I'm going to focus on. Because otherwise, you do have... There's too much to go around.
It's just a shame there's not a respec.
Right, yeah. Like, I'm going to wipe all the experience off of this one and dump it onto this guy.
Yeah, but at the same time. Yeah, that's probably a good way to play it, actually. If I could... And I've felt that way about this time that I've been playing it, is that maybe I should just restart. Maybe I should restart, make it even harder. Make go another difficulty up.
I mean, I could always just lend you Conquest, so it's trade off.
That's true. I mean, you're playing your copy, so I've never had a chance to play Conquest. Granted, I did not spend any money on it. You spent all the money, and I'm just basically getting this game, fun game I get to play. Maybe it would be fair to let you have a shot at Birthright and see what you think of it.
And I think,
and see if what I've been saying about it makes sense to you, like, from my whole perspective, because I think they're very different games.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of being like a, you know, Red and Blue or whatever, X and Y, they seem like they're totally different styles of games. And so much of that, it's sort of like, do you want to be Ash or do you want to be Team Rocket?
Right.
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, it's I think I've made this comparison before, but it's kind of like the Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Season games on the Game Boy Color. They're sort of companion pieces, but they're different games. You're recruiting different units, playing different types of maps, so on and so forth. Anyway, we've gotten off on this Fire Emblem tangent. Do you want to take in your tangents? You want to talk about Advance Wars and how much we want another one of those games?
That would be brilliant. I'd love it. And that's really why I'm recommending this game. I think if you are... the sprite works fine on it. It's not the greatest graphics of a Super Nintendo game.
Mm-hmm.
But this game really does manage to just be this little catch-all of all of these really, really fun games. I see so many different elements of Fire Emblem, of Pokemon, of tactics, of Advance Wars. Like, it's all of these really fun game mechanics get crammed together. It manages to not be cluttered in a weird way. It doesn't overdo it with all of this stuff. And you kind of have fun playing it. I think, just in general, it's really, really cool how this guy was kind of able to put together a game like this.
So, Well, is it available on a download service? I know it's been ported to a ton of different systems.
As far as, well, and that's the other thing is like, we're talking about on the SNES because we have a podcast around the SNES.
Right.
If we had a podcast about the PlayStation, we would probably be talking about the same game.
Right.
And it would be different in some ways, especially graphically, it would look a lot different. But this was a game that, yeah, we were pretty late in the life cycle of the Super Nintendo, and there were ports of this game made for other systems, including PlayStation. I, of course, am going to always say, play the Super Nintendo version of anything, but...
even though the cartridge will run you quite a bit of money.
This is a very expensive game. If I remember correctly, it's about somewhere between $150 and $200.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so not easy to come by, but I think it's a brilliant game. It's so fun.
So, actually, could you hit the Wikipedia page real quick? Because I think this one might have been available to download on the Wii.
Oh, Virtual Console.
Virtual Console?
As of November 20th, 2013.
Was that Japan only? Yeah, Japan only. Yeah, Japan. Of course. Only. How about, not the Wii, but the standard Wii. Yeah, you can get this on the Wii Virtual Console.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, of course, that means you can get it on the Wii U. You just have to enter Wii mode, download on the Wii Shop.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't be able to transfer it onto your Wii U. You won't be able to take advantage of things like restore points, like suspend points, I should say. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, at least it's available on a download service. You don't have to pay $200.
I mean, I'm not playing this on a cartridge. I sure as shit didn't spend $150 to play this game. I'm playing it through emulators.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, hey, like, it's one of the nice features of an emulator is this. If, at least if you're playing the one I have, the space bar is 10 times speed. So...
And as we just kind of glanced at the Wikipedia page, I didn't notice if it was available on Steam or anything like that. So, you know, make your game easier to play, and people won't have to use emulators. I mean, that's really all there is to it.
That's true. Oh, I wish I had spent a little more time reading this before actually getting into this conversation. Yeah, so there are apparently 75 different classes.
Oh, shit.
Think about that. There's 75 different things you can be.
So. I don't want to think about that.
That's
crazy.
Oh, that's right. There's pumpkins in this. You can be these little pumpkin monsters.
Wait, what do the pumpkin monsters do?
I don't even really remember. I played with them, but they're like basically they look like scarecrows with big pumpkin heads.
Hmm.
I think they, if I remember correctly, all I remember doing is playing them on the front line. And I think they just run in and like swipe.
Oh, that reminds me. When you're engaging in battle, will what your characters are doing, what your units are doing, change whether they're playing offense or defense?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, absolutely. Front row, back row determines a lot about what they're gonna do. So God forbid you put that white mage on the front line. I think if they heal, it's like a really weak heal that doesn't really affect everybody. Or they might even like try to actually swing their stave or staff.
Hit the guy with a stick.
That's a bad idea. Yeah, you have to kind of think about what you want them to do because they'll do different things to help you out depending upon whether they're in the front or whether they're in the back.
Can you swap rows on the fly in a particular battle map? Or
you might be able to, yeah, while you're in the game but not in the fight.
Right.
I think you can go in and rearrange and reorganize.
But let's say you just have like a standard grunt unit, and the grunt unit is attacking an enemy, like swings his sword or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to perform the same action if he is being attacked? Like if your enemy engages the combat, is he still doing something?
He just takes the hit.
Okay.
Or maybe dodges. I think they either just take the hit.
Okay. So it's not like in Advance Wars or Fire Emblem where combat's initiated, the aggressor takes a turn, then the defender takes a turn.
That's exactly what it's like.
Oh, okay.
Or it's like you will shoot, because you're commanding armies, and it's all real time, so all of your troops are moving at the same time. You're just giving them destinations.
Oh, okay.
So you could basically like spawn all your units and then just beeline straight to your enemy base and be like, I'm just going to fucking steamroll this map and go straight to you. I'm not going to try to take any towns. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm just going to go for the throat. What your opponent is going to do is probably freak the fuck out, for starters, and then try to amass all their units and then go at you the same way. So then what's going to happen is if you have three and three stacked on top of each other, it's going to do this ping maneuver where it's like the two fight, and then the winner goes push back. And then the next one will come forward from the loser's side, fight this troop, which has probably taken some serious damage, and then maybe win, and then push that one back. And then they're going to keep going back and forth until a winner's figured out. And then whoever is left pushing forward will continue forward.
How quickly do these battles move? Do you like have time to sort of like send your troops in a direction, like assess where they're going?
It's not... it happens in real time. You can pause the game to make all your decisions, unpause the game, and then everything moves.
Okay.
So it's not like you have to immediately beyond, it's not StarCraft where you have to like immediately make all of your decisions and freak the fuck out about what you're going to do and organize everything. You can kind of pause the game, think, all right, I'm going to take, you know, my strongest unit. I'm going to put them right in the middle of the map to be prepared for whatever my opponent does in case they decide they want to try to go flank me for some reason. And then I'm going to take these other ones as sort of scouts, exploratory teams. I'm going to go capture this neutral town. I'm going to go to this little mountain building. I'm going to go over here. And once we get everything, we're going to see what our opponent's done and then try to fight. You know, that's a really basic strategy of how you would want to play. All
right.
Get everything you can. Collect all of the towns. Because you want to, it's again, exactly like Advance Wars. You want to take those neutral towns because neutral towns are good for you. They heal your units and I believe they make you money.
Oh, nice.
So that's the idea, is divide, conquer, find a good strategy, and then go into the fight.
Is that money going to, like, are you going to start banking immediately, or is it going to, like, get you more, like, net you more at the end of the battle?
I believe it just nets you more at the end. Again, okay. I've tried to play more recently. But yeah, it's going to help you fund the units that you have in the fight. So always good to have more money, and it's good to play with the idea to get as much money.
Oh, does it cost cash to heal up? Like, if you have to send a unit back to...
No, you get back to the base and they heal up automatically, okay. As I remember. There's no, like, currency cost to heal.
Gotcha.
And you have healing units, so if you need it, they're going to be there for you.
Speaking of StarCraft, do you play Zerg, Protoss, Terran?
I'm actually a big Terran fan.
Yeah, I really like them, too.
I like Siege Tanks. Mm-hmm. I play a lot with Siege Tanks and just so many Marines. Marines are the good all-purpose unit.
I love the Terran's just ability to turtle up. Just like, this is my base, no one's getting in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of my favorite strategies is actually to wall up, build the second command center inside of your walled up first base, and then position them out on the next one, and then just send out your little APC guys to build more walls.
Yeah, just keep on expanding your base, like build little bases here and there. Yeah,
You time it right, it's so difficult to bring down Terran. Mm-hmm. That's always my favorite. Also, quite frankly, like, I feel like Zerg has me mentally too frayed, where I'm like constantly trying to maximize everything and I'm worried. I always get to do this thing where I either underproduce or overproduce drones. Mm. Where I'm like building too many of these little guys and not building enough like stuff that can actually fight things. Or I'm building too few of them and focusing too much on the fight. Or larva, you know. Yeah. It's a tricky mechanic. And I think Protoss is pretty straightforward. Protoss can be a ton of fun with how fucking quick you can pump out units. Because of the way that it's just spawns units.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can kind of spawn them anywhere. I feel like there's like, that, again, it's a good rock, paper, scissor. With every element of the game, they seem to find a cool way to balance. We're not talking about StarCraft, but I used to play a ton of StarCraft. And
I used to play a lot of it, too. I've never really tinkered too much with online, but I like to just like play a map.
I mean, I think they're... It's in spite of... It's a game that is the equivalent of... I mean, if you play a lot of player versus player games, I feel like this is like UFC.
Mm.
This is a game that is very violent and brutal and forces you to think about how you're going to kill your opponent. It's not like you're playing somebody on a shooter where you're going to like... I know, and I realize as I say this, you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to put a bullet in this guy's head. It's not like that. You really have to strategize about how can I truly defeat this opponent? How can I truly beat this person?
Yeah, it's not like a shooter where it's a lot of twitch-based. How are my reflexes quicker than yours?
And yet, at the same time, it's one of the best communities I've ever seen in gaming. They're always very friendly, I think, because... The best players in the world still win 55% of the time. They lose 45% of the time. There's nobody that's that good at these games that they can consistently just win all the time. You know, you kind of take your lumps. You're going to lose a lot no matter what. And if you're a nice person or if you're just... You learn to be gracious. You learn to take your losses and learn from them.
I did get StarCraft 2 back when it came out. I actually bought it as a gift for my brother. And I bought it... His birthday was like 2 months away. I wasn't going to see him until then. I was like, I'll give this a shot. So I have very limited experience with StarCraft 2, but what I played with, I really liked a lot.
Yeah.
And one of these days, I get back around to it. Because I think we have like a bunch of expansions out now.
It's really Heart of the Swarm. It's a really, really fun expansion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially if you like that that Turtle Terran strategy.
Sure do.
Oh, it's a tremendous one.
Anyway, this is not the StarCraft podcast.
No.
But I think that's going to wrap us up. Anything else about Ogre Battle that we want to...
No, we talked forever about this, I feel like. It's a really fun game. It's a little bit of so many great things. If you like strategy games, if you like RPG games, You're gonna find something you like here.
Very cool. So we are about to record a bunch of Space Worlds. We're gonna gonna take us into May with all these Space Worlds. And we're just gonna hit the Alien franchise pretty hard here. Something to look forward to. I like that we are, by the time we get these recorded and posted, we'll be close to halfway through 2016, and we have not talked about a single Star Wars. We've not talked about a single Star Trek on the Space World.
Yeah. Episodes. Because I have a list of ones that I think I'd like to talk about with a certain time frame in which they would happen.
Yeah.
And at the very, very bottom of the list is the Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. I would really like to talk about Force Awakens.
We'll have to make sure Wes is
But
here.
We will table that. Yeah, yeah. As I understand, Wes and I have differing opinions.
you sure do. Yeah. And maybe I'll have seen it by that. Yeah. I think it's like Netflix.
Oh, it's already out. Yeah. So if you've got your, if you're willing to turn in that disc you've had for 3 months.
I did. Yes. Oh. I finally started. I started watching. We couldn't finish it. Me and Des finally started watching When Marnie Was There, which is a Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, it's anime.
And I don't know, we both just got so bored.
Yeah.
It wasn't
pretty enough to capture.
It was pretty, and that was what was carrying us through. It was how nice looking it was. But you know, you compared it to something like she really likes Howl's Moving Castle or Spirited Away, where stuff isn't happening. Mm-hmm. And it's very naturalistic movie. Of course, there's fucking supernatural elements to it. There's like a ghost. There's a ghost girl.
Yeah, I think they would have a hard time making a
right,
just kind of a drama.
But just the scenery in general, it's very idyllic. There's like this very Japanese countryside. Yeah, it's a hard movie to maintain focus on. When you know, like a lot of other movies, like fucking Prometheus, they're just like all this gorgeous, beautiful stuff hitting you hard and fast.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, I turned that back in, and Force Awakens is coming to Netflix. Available on DVD like on May 3rd
That's
or something.
Awesome.
Like that.
Yeah, so I'm interested to hear what you think of it.
All right, so let's close out this show and then move over to our Space World. So the next show proper that's on the Space World is going to be the Fisher Show. We'll do news, we'll do new releases, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. Great. And we'll preview the month of June. So till next time, everybody.
All right, later. We'll be right back.